Hello, and welcome to this pre-recorded millennial session, and this is with Red Ice. I hardly need to introduce them, but this is Henrik Palmgren and Lana Loctiv and Rorik.
He's the head of the head of the tribe.
Hello.
That guy.
Say hi.
He runs the show these days.
Yeah. He's the boss around here.
He's the boss, baby. Yeah.
Yeah, he's certainly growing. I mean, the last time that's I saw right. him, he was a wee baby.
That's right. He made an appearance last year, huh?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Yeah, we thought that it's the only kind of cameo he's done, right? So yeah. I thought we have to do it, turn it into a tradition, Woos, and show the progress. Yeah. You know,
how that's, he's a, doing. That's a really good idea. It could be a yearly progress report.
Woos checkup, right? A checkup with Woos.
He drinks from glasses. He's never used a pacifier. He's quite advanced for his age. He's already saying words. Oh, you don't like that.
He's already flipping us off like a teenager and stuff like that.
No.
No.
Well, it's nice to see him again. So I suppose we'll talk just in general about how 2018 has gone for Red Ice and your thoughts on the year in general. That's how I usually start these millennials, and it tends to work out okay.
Yeah, like a little wrap up of the year, right?
Yeah,
I guess it bears to think about what the hell's happened. It's been maybe not like 2016 that eventful, but it's definitely been eventful. It's definitely been chaotic in many ways for us, and it's continued. You know, in 2017. Do you want to go back, Rorik? Yeah, maybe Lana, you'll take him back. she'll be back. It's bedtime for him, by the way. That's why he has the pajamas on, the little Christmas pajamas this time. I mean, I think the year, to be honest, is just thinking off the top of my head, it feels like it's been dominated by censorship, to be honest, and shadow bannings, termination of accounts. Again, just in the wake of Charlottesville, that's just been ramping up even more and more and more. There's been other events, of course, like the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting, which led to a further termination of a lot of accounts and things like that for people. And I think from our point of view, from what stands out to me in terms of a difficult thing was to be financially blocked by PayPal or censored, I don't know what to call it, financially discriminated against by PayPal. So we were almost like run into the ground because
overnight.
we lost all the recurring subscriptions like overnight.
Absolutely terrible.
That was really hard. And I was scared, obviously, like what's going to happen? Is it all going to like crumble and fall apart now? At the same time, we went through some, you know, the hack on the day of Charlottesville, our website.
Were hacked. I mean, that was last year. That was
August last
year. And that was a terrible thing. I mean, I don't suppose you've ever got to the bottom of what happened that day.
We have some pretty good ideas and stuff, but just the idea of try to following through with like law enforcement in America and stuff like that doesn't. I don't trust it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I think the FBI had enough involvement in Charlottesville, as it were. To be honest, people who have been looking through the event said that it was riddled with FBI agents. That they had their vans and stuff all over the place. I'm sure they wanted to derail things. So even if we wanted to on that level approach someone to like, you know, look into it or a deeper kind of analysis of you know, the data or the logs or, you know, something like that. It was just, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right. I you know, you can't trust the law enforcement.
Especially if it was someone from the inside. Exactly.
From the beginning. But anyway, that's last year, yeah, previous. Yeah. But anyway, the PayPal thing is, I mean, that happened to a lot of people too at the same time and stuff like that.
We were one of the first, yeah.
Well, you know, depends on how you see it, right? There was a couple of others before then. I forget who it was, but it was, you know, the usual suspects, I guess, they were thrown off before and they couldn't use, you know, use PayPal.
It gets so hard to remember these different things, like who was banned from Twitter at what point and who was lost their channel at what point. It's just a nightmare.
And then also this year, YouTube started limiting or video putting them in quarantine, and it happened to be a lot of the most popular videos. So as blackpilling as some of these things have been with banning and censorship and being banned from gateways, you know, my videos were getting the most hits ever this year too. So on the plus side, you know, we were still growing despite all of that, even though they're putting our videos in quarantine. But I noticed it was some of our most popular ones that were about to reach 1 million that they all of a sudden wanted to put away in quarantine, because they don't want us to have that kind of a reach, you know. So no. They definitely combed through our channel. They removed, put away a lot of things. Henrik, wouldn't you say a lot of anything that's a revisionist or questioning, you know, certain elites, for instance, all those definitely get thrown into the gulags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And we got a strike on the YouTube channel too, as we can live stream. And well, you went through that too, Woz, right? But you actually got it back.
Indeed. And I haven't recorded the video yet where I explain this to people, but by the time this goes up, that video will have gone up. But yes, it was very strange. Five channels in one day got a channel strike. Two of them for the first time ever, me and Black Pigeon Speaks, had never got a channel strike before. And the video that they did me for was really not, I mean, it was quite innocuous. And it was over a year old. Same with Black Pigeon. So, yeah, five of us all in one day.
It's bizarre. Planned, right?
It has to have been planned. But then the weird thing is that they revoked my, they undid it with me.
Did you appeal?
I'm nervous. Yeah, I did appeal, yeah.
Okay, so then obviously it went through. I mean, I wasn't even seeing that option on our channel. Like, it wasn't available.
No, we did.
On several videos, I didn't see it.
On the one we got a strike on, I did appeal that, and you know, but nothing ever came of that. So, you know, for us, it was a lost cause.
We were criticizing an NGO, for crying out loud. That's all we were doing. We were pointing out what they were doing illegally in Europe. Yes.
It's just crazy. I don't know what to say. I mean, I was banned from Twitter 2 months and a week ago. And I've talked and talked about that, and I'm certainly not going to go on about it again. I'm actually sick of talking about it myself.
You know what? I feel like that over censorship overall. Like, everyone is tired of hearing it, but it's such a big deal, right? Huge. Because it's what we communicate, you know?
Yeah, and it's never going to go away. And it's going to become, I guess it's going to become ever more prevalent.
It's going to get worse. And then the other thing on top of it is we've been defamed a lot in mainstream media this year. It's just more and more every
more
year.
Lies
even
and more
CNN
nonsense.
Mentioning Red Ice and a lot of major outlets NBC. Mentioning us. A wiki page went up about both you and I, Henrik, and mine was right away. I mean, it's common. You have to laugh at some point. Lana Loctuff is a white supremacist. Like, literally, that's the only thing to describe me. And people have been trying to get that thing edited, and each time they just, this is vital information that's important. So they're defaming you while they're trying to block your voice from you being able to defend yourself.
And the defaming comes in as a way to justify the censorship of you, right? They make on these bullshit articles that is based on exaggerations, misinterpretations, misrepresentations, just flat out defamations. There's no sources to them. If you actually go and look at it, it's actually interpretation by the author of the article. It's not actually like documented a source. Like, where did I or where did Lana say the specific thing that leads them to write something like this, right? But those articles, and this is how they make history. This is how the liars write history. These articles become the source material for the Wikipedia page. And the Wikipedia pages become the top hit searches for anyone, you know, that is associated with anything. It happens obviously for everyone. Like, if Wikipedia is number one, right? So then people go there and then they read that, and that's the truth, right? That's how they make history. So they lie and they make it up. They defame you. Nothing to back up their claims, but this is how they just write this into existence. And then you can have snitches and these like little squealy pigs that can run along and like send a Wiki page to maybe to PayPal or to Twitter or to whatever it is, right? And say, look, this is a bad, evil person, and block them and take them down and stuff like that. This is how they run the show, you know?
Yeah, yeah. One part of the left reinforces and galvanizes another part of the left.
Mm-hmm.
So they sort of, as I said, I did a speech recently about this machinery of silence, where I said that it's a sort of an appearance of conflict within the establishment or the left. And, but it's just an appearance of conflict. They're sort of enabling each other to do what they all want to do anyway, which is to get rid of us.
Yeah, get rid of the competition, not have any different viewpoints, not allowing anyone to think differently. I mean, I think it didn't begin with Alex Jones. I think it began with like Anglin and Daily Stormer, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, but it's escalated. They have included more and more outlets in the censorship vortex.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
They just suck him away.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not that the landscape now is not what it was 2 years ago. You know, I mean, I said things that I simply wouldn't say now, not even hate speech stuff, just statements that I wouldn't make now simply because they would be too risky. in one way or another. And I think that a lot of people feel like this. Other people have said this to me, that they're afraid to upload any video to YouTube nowadays in case.
Yeah, people have toned it down because they'd rather be there and say something or a little bit of something, get people's attention rather than nothing at all.
And I mean, you have to have that strategy. I think it's just stupid that there are always those people that are like, you know, just pedal to the metal and just throttle.
Well, then
and
we'll
just
be
like
gone.
And exactly. Yeah. And then we won't be able to reach anyone. I think we have to ride this thing until the freaking wheels fall off, right? I'm talking about YouTube and, you know, some of these outlets. They're like, it has to just, you know, if we get knocked off an account, create another one, begin over, just do it, pump it out there, get it out there, right? But be smart. You use good language and you know, don't be, I don't think we're offensive anyway, but these leftists and SJWs and globalists are so damn, you know,
absolutely. Exactly. That's the thing, right? I really don't think we are that extreme. No. But the way that our opponents talk about us, you'd think that we were monsters.
Absolutely.
I mean, they always use one particular, they use several quotes from me, actually. One of them where I said that women shouldn't have the vote. I think that was in 2016, early 2016. And but they always use particular quotes that, out of context and in isolation, sounded.
They do. Yeah.
But then, you know, they don't say, what did you say right after that to qualify it or to just.
So dirty every time they do that.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been described as incredibly extreme. And I just don't see it. I cannot believe I am incredibly extreme. And indeed, I think that our grandparents, and certainly our great grandparents, would have basically agreed with. But virtually everything that we do.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's it's effectful for them to do that too, because it means that it's a two. I guess I see it in two ways. One is as you then begin to be conscious of the censorship, you begin to tone down your language, and
that's
yes, to a certain extent, it's self censorship, right? But at the same time, that also then makes the very tame opinions that or tame opinions, but. The
very mellow, reasonable,
very mellow, reasonable way that you present it to seem extreme. So on one end, they manage to move the needle of like, oh, just common logic, rational arguments is now extremism. At the same time, for those who actually listen to what we say and give us a chance, let's say newcomers or whatever, for those to read articles and then maybe go and listen to us, it must be like they must be like have dissociative disorder or something. After
it's
that.
True. And I have to say, it's a risk for them because anytime they write about us, there are a lot of people that will go check out our stuff this year more than ever. This is, you know, white pills for me. I've had more conservatives and Republicans write and say, wow, I heard about you through this avenue or this avenue. Love Red Ice now. I didn't know this kind of material was out there. I'm a new supporter. I can't be public about it, but I am with you guys 100%. I've had more of those kinds of messages than ever this year. So that makes me really hopeful.
That is very encouraging. I mean, obviously, none of us really know what the future is going to hold or how this is going to develop. But do you have any speculations on, for example, the decentralized web that I hear people talking about? Because it does seem to me that, well, unless we get the Internet Bill of Rights, SMACA or whatever, then YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and so on, are gone for us long term. So then, how are we going to continue? And I would say that, I have no idea. I have no idea how we're going to continue. What do you think?
It's hard to see from here what might be invented. You know, it's like trying to be 100 years ago and say, oh, what's going to be in the future? You know, it is difficult.
I think there's two ways to same thing there. You could go two paths really. And one is, as you say, that it's that the YouTubes and the Twitters and the Facebooks, they basically shoot themselves in the foot and slowly just bleed to death, right? It's like it becomes more about the propaganda, it becomes more about controlling the narrative, and more people wake up to that and realize that fact and actually leave the platforms and go to other platforms. Again, I don't know, but as you say, Woz, there would be, you know, what there would be blockchain, you know, technology or something like truly decentralized or, you know, something like that. And those are just not viable big enough options yet. You know, they're tiny, they're small. And so the difficult thing is, how do you get people to go over to a new platform? I mean, frankly, as many people don't, because they're habitual. They want what they want, right? They have the YouTube app on their phone or whatever. So they go there, and I get it too. I mean, it's like, you know, it's more hassle, more spread out it is and all that kind of stuff. But I just don't see how YouTube you know, they're starting up this TV, YouTube TV now, right? And they're bringing like more mainstream figures on. And it's boring. It's basically everything that was great with YouTube was you could get any alternative viewpoint under the sun, mm-hmm. right? And you can find anything. Now they're blocking it. They're putting articles about, like, you know, if you talk about global warming, then it's like, you know, they reference the Encyclopedia Britannica, like, what is it really? They have to justify everything all the time and source it, what the truth is, you know. And now they're blocking all that kind of material. So people who are truth seekers and want to find a different view on things, they surely is going to be fed up with YouTube, because you're not going to be able to find anything at some point. So
yeah, I think there's going to have to be a separation between what you would call truth seekers and the normal viewing public. Now they want cat videos and prank videos and so on. Now at the present moment, both of those groups of people are served on YouTube, and that's advantageous because everyone's in one place, just like on Twitter, everyone's in one place, in one public square. But I think that realistically, YouTube is becoming more and more bland and censorious and anodyne. So it just feels like they're losing patience with, well, anything challenging or highbrow even. I mean, it's becoming like a playpen.
Yeah, I mean, Lana, we saw that with the kind of the dumbing down of everything too. It's like just
idiocracy.
Exactly, it's like boring. There's nothing intellectual fun anymore on the platform. So I just don't. There's just no viable, like, okay, this is the alternative that we're going to. That doesn't exist yet. It might exist, but it's not. It hasn't gained the traction that it needs to gain to be an option. But the fact is, YouTube, and you remember this too, Lana, they got so much pressure again from all these articles, right? It's mm-hmm. The Mix, it's the Verge, the Daily. Well,
Mix gone now,
Yeah, exactly. Thankfully, you know, all these outlets, Vox and stuff, and they put pressure on YouTube.
That's exactly, my point, yeah. And a lot of them were just ticked off because when it comes to politics on YouTube, who's the most popular? It's right leaning channels. Yes. That's what people want to see, and that's getting the most views and hits, and that really ticks them off.
That's what they wrote about all those articles. Yeah. Like, oh my God, YouTube is the new right wing talk radio. Like, shut it down. How do we do this? You know?
Yeah. Oh God, but that reminds me of another censorious actor that you didn't mention earlier, but you could have, and that was a British politician called Yvette Cooper, who said to, was it the CEO of YouTube or some representative of YouTube, that she wanted your channel shut down, or at least removed from Britain, so it couldn't be seen in Britain. I mean, these people, my blood was boiling when I watched that, when I saw that clip for the first time. I couldn't believe the arrogance of these people. Because she is responsible, as part of the New Labour government from 1997 to 2010, she, Yvette Cooper, is responsible for transforming Britain demographically. And so she's done that, and now she also wants to stop people from complaining about it.
Yeah, yeah, because it's her fault. That's the thing. Do you think she feels struck? She saw the
hit
promo.
A nerve, huh?
Exactly. She saw the promo
that
we did.
The war on whites. It was all their own words. Yeah,
we didn't mention a single word. No, it was just quotes.
It was powerful stuff.
Actions. It was music in the background. She obviously saw that, and it was like a kick in the gut to her. Yeah. Probably. And she just like, oh my God,
why does this come up as related?
You know, yeah. Why does it come up as related? Just remove it, right? But this is true, though, and this is where it goes into really dangerous territory. The UN Global Compact for Migration is going to be signed here within just five days, and that is going to
they want to make it illegal to criticize
legal
immigration.
Framework. Each nation decides it needs a legal framework to stop criticism against migration and open borders. Right, so it's all going to be hate speech. If you criticize migration, if you think it's a bad thing, or if you talk about the kinds of things we talk about, then it might be a punishable crime, you know?
Absolutely incredible. I mean, the hate speech thing is interesting in itself because it's a sort of, it's the special category. Like in America, there's the First Amendment, but hate speech is a special thing that it's still protected by the First Amendment, but it can lose you your job or it can lose you your YouTube channel or whatever. And it can get your reputation destroyed and so on. And then you get, that being used by many different companies, corporations, websites. They say, well, you did hate, you said something that was hate speech, therefore you cannot use our service. And it's like, okay, so I didn't plant a bomb. I didn't do some terrorist activity, but I did hate speech. So even though I'm peaceful, I'm still persona non grata on this.
And they never define it. With all these big corporations and NGOs using these terms, nowhere has there been anything that's been defined or even argued in a court of law ever. That's what's so scary about it.
Well, it has to remain vague so that they can use it.
Exactly. The more ambiguous it is, the better for them it is, right? Yeah. If they define it, then people can run around it. But also,
if there's this special category, then you can, if you can add anything you want to that category, then all the better, you know? Suddenly, nothing's free speech.
Exactly. But there must be something, I think, legally where these platforms need to at least point to an example or like what their reasoning were when they censored or blocked or terminated your account. At least when it comes to financial services, to be honest, because like that's the worst possible. Like they're killing your ability to survive, basically, right? Based on an interpretation of what they think that you were talking about, or the fact that they don't like what you were talking about. Legally, there should be like an obligation to like, okay, well, you said this, well, and point exactly. to something specific and say, exactly. this and is why you violated.
This is why I say the concept of hate speech is so important, because it enables corporations to withdraw services from you, even though you haven't committed a crime.
Yeah, so the exactly.
It's very, very useful to people because it's not legally binding. They don't need to define it. They can just say, well, that we call that thing hate speech, and we don't allow hate speech on our platform, so you're screwed.
Yeah.
And you don't committed any crimes at all.
And look at how the left is like just cheering this on now. Yay!
Oh yeah, they love it.
This is wonderful.
They used to cry about Nazi book burning. Exactly. Now fascists shutting us down. Now. Oh, they're way worse than some book burning in the 30s. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. The glee that they show about censorship and deplatforming is just. It's so ugly. I don't know. I don't think they realize how ugly, how the monsters that they've become, quite frankly. They've become people who actively search out and instances of someone being silenced in order that they can celebrate that happening to the person.
Yeah.
I really think, though, talking to a lot of normies and even Democrats, there's a lot of people who don't like censorship. So I think that the majority of people are for free speech and they are against us, that it is a loud and also powerful vocal minority, and then all their little minions that are the ones that are really, really pushing this. So I think that they can push it too far, where there's even Democrats now that are, you know, saying like, whoa, hey, what's happening here?
Yeah, I mean, they never... I would hope that they are like that, but it feels like the majority are not like involved in these things. They don't understand the battles that's going on right now for free speech.
It's always been a small group of people who've been interested in politics.
Even those 68ers or whatever, like these old, you know, the Berkeley, marching on Berkeley for free speech kind of, you know, boomers or whatever they were at that point, or what they become. Yeah, I mean,
and Berkeley was just sued, by the way. You know? Some conservative group sued Berkeley and just won. It was a landmark case I just read about today. So Berkeley has to pay this group $70,000, and they have to be able to speak there. So that was a big landmark case today. I think there's going to be more of that kind of thing happening.
There must be more of that.
Yeah, there has to be a strong movement that's pro free speech, that's going after all kinds of organizations and businesses and companies.
I completely agree. That's something that I really think that, I mean, I've said it before, I think that the free speech issue should really be the number one issue for the dissident right in general, because if you don't have free speech, you can't discuss anything else. You can't. You're just like dead man walking. But the other thing is, as you just alluded to, it needs to be a very broad coalition, as broad as possible. And this is why I am not, I make a conscious effort not to counter-signal other people in public, because I just don't want, I mean, I've always been of the mind that we should, you know, it's better that we're working together and on good terms with each other and so on. But I think that is 10 times as true now as it was 2 years ago. We really need to, you know, build as many bridges as possible. We need to be like a machine, you know, because our bloody opponents are, you know, we've been describing all the way through this, how they work together, how they collaborate. They don't care that they don't agree with each other on, you know, 100% of the issues. They just get the job done. And it's frightening. And, you know, but until we work together in order to mount an equally coordinated and efficient response, then we've not got really any right to be surprised by this, even though it is surprising and shocking. All the time, every day, someone else, a friend of mine just got banned from Twitter, Duke of Durham. You know, he had 8,000 followers. You hear about it all the time. Laura Loomer, a few weeks ago.
That's right.
I think she had, I don't know how many she had, a lot of them, probably over 100,000 followers, I would guess. But, I mean, it happens all the time. And I really think that the time is, we cannot afford petty disagreements.
We need the numbers.
Anymore.
Yeah,
we need to just act as a collective, really. I think more and more, at least on this issue. I mean, we can have other disagreements later, frankly.
Yeah,
it's not exactly. People are like, it's been said before, but people are like, you know, polishing the brass and rearranging the furniture on the Titanic, like it's going down, and arguing about it, like where should the couch be, or what, you know.
Yeah, it's like, what's the precise manner in which it's failed?
Yeah, exactly. The destiny is like it's it's been running to the ground, and people are like bickering about these little things, you know. Yeah, I mean, we've always taken that stance as well. It just don't get into fights with people like that. It's just, I mean, it looks bad, and even if you do it, don't do it like in public. There's still some like Twitter meltdowns that people have,
oh,
and
geez.
They bitch back and forth, and it's just like, really, you know. Come on, like do that behind locked doors.
Or yeah, and I guess speaking of things this year, obviously we've seen the alt-right splinter into all kinds of different ways. That's pretty much not even a term being used anymore. And I know some people or a lot of enemies were like, ha, 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 it's all over. No, all these good people are still here and we're all still talking and we all still believe what we believe. We don't need one name to unite under. And a movement, this is what happens. It refines, it becomes more mature, we learn things as we grow. This is all part of it, you know.
Yeah, I'm not pessimistic about that at all. By the time this goes up, I will have had Sargon of Akkad on Millennial, and he'll probably, I'm expecting that he will make some passing reference to the fact that the term alt-right is not really used much anymore. And I shouldn't say too much, actually, because who knows, it might go perfectly without a hitch, I don't know. But the point is that there are people being triumphalist about this, and I think it's naive, because mm-hmm. from my point of view, well, all of the issues that gave rise to the alt-right are still there. In fact, they're much more intense than they were 5 years ago. All of the people involved in the alt-right are still active, and the audiences are growing all the time. So even though they're, I mean, as you say, you know, a movement transforms and mutates, especially in its early years. And I think that's what we're seeing now. I'm not, I don't feel, oh no, it's all over now.
Yeah.
And the excitement. No. But what I do feel is that the specific phase of 2016, the Trump thing, I think that's over. Mm-hmm. But you
absolutely.
Know, fair yeah. enough. It was a carnival. It lasted a year and a half. Fine, it's over. Let's
it was fun for a little while.
We don't need to be afraid of moving forward. So I'm not pessimistic about this at all, actually. I think what we're seeing is that a certain, a very vague structure that existed has broken down and sort of collapsed into bits. And now they're going to reform into a new shape, a new structure. And that will probably happen again after a couple of years and again after a couple of years. But this is something this process of, as Lana says, refinement and purification and becoming ever more efficient and so on, I think is just unstoppable because it has to happen. So, yeah, I'm actually optimistic about this in the short and medium term. The long term is more another matter.
Yeah, it's like an alchemical experience, you know, and death and rebirth. And
yeah,
I mean, I feel like even I have transformed ways that I'm looking at things. And I mean, you just, you gain a maturity, you gain a different understanding through time. That's just what happens.
Right? I see it as a, you know, as an example of what can happen and what will happen when you see these forces joining, rallying behind something. Trump really was the symbol at that time of what the alt-right rallied behind, right? And not everyone agreed everything that he said, or whatever, but he became more than his individual self, and a lot of people projected a lot of things on him. But it was
exactly.
basically
an exciting thing to latch onto.
Yeah, and it was exactly, and even again, sure that fallout and the collapse of that kind of occurred later on, but that's fine. It was like when you get such a meteoric rise of something like you had with the alt-right, You know, we have a saying in Sweden, which is basically translate. You know what I'm going to say? Up is a sun, down is a pancake, right? It means like something that's rises super fast and with the brilliance of the sun or whatever.
And burn it's
almost,
out flat.
Exactly. Always, its destiny is to fall flat. You know,
this is like Blade Runner, isn't it? Oh no, it's not actually. Now that you've said the pancake, it's not. Forget that. We'll go without a Blade Runner reference for this hangout.
Okay. But you get the point. It's like, you know, I guess what was it called again? The Highlander. He says that, right? The Kurgan. He says it's better to burn out than to fade away, right? It's like you know, yeah. It's an explosion basically of just light and force and. An example of what could be done, right? And then it falls apart. That's fine. But as you say, everything is still there, mm-hmm. right? They can left can rejoice and ha ha, it's all over. It's like, and no, I don't think you understand that. It's like next time it forms, it pulls itself together again.
Yeah.
Maybe like that, the liquid Terminator or something. Like that.
Well,
when that goes together, then like it'll be stronger. It'll be updated.
That's
it'll be smarter. It will be. Have learned from its lesson. It would have adapted. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about the Borg in the Star Trek. I'm just going over.
Very good. But yeah, I agree. And this is again why I think that the left should really not celebrate. They're so naive. If they think that, I mean, it's the same with Sargon, right? The centrists. If they think that identity politics is going to go away, they're in for a huge surprise. And if the left think that white identity politics is going to go away, they're in for a massive shock. What else needs to be said?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's far, far from over, and more people are coming to our side. They're seeing our arguments. And again, why? I mean, we've started talking about about censorship. Why in the world would multi-million-dollar companies and stuff like that be concerned with, in comparison, small YouTube channels?
Yeah.
You know, to be honest, I mean, it's a real threat, and they don't like it, and they are scared, and it's a sign of something which is not, you know, I've said it before, but it's not something which is confident and secure in its position. And they know that it's like teetering at the end, that this kind of what's happening in France right now, that if people, you know, they wake up and they decide we're sick and tired of these elites, these upper echelon politicians or whatever the hell we're talking about, then they will lash out. They will cause a revolution. It will get nasty, but they will ultimately win that battle, because there's no way that even the country with all its military and police can turn against the people in that way, you know. So that's what it's really about. It's an uprising against the establishment. I think it can be peaceful, and it should be, but the point is that it's ultimately the people that decide. That's always what it's been at the throughout history. You can have tyrants, and they can chop heads, and they can imprison people and torture them. But after a certain point, if the people decide that they've had enough, then the heads of the establishment is going to roll. You know, and it's not an encouragement to violence. I'm just talking about the reality of the history.
Obviously.
You know, like if you look at what's happened in history, and people get pissed off and they get mad and they move that power structure to the side and they build something new. And so I think that that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of people fighting back and standing up and saying no and throwing them out the halls of influence and power, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But the thing about the yellow jackets or yellow vests, I don't know what, if we've said
I think it's vests. Yeah, I say jackets. Yeah,
right.
Whatever.
And I don't know what people are calling. I've seen both names. But the thing with that someone pointed out is that it does show, if nothing else, if it achieves nothing else, it will have shown that, as you say, the public can do this. The people can do this. They can actually, they can do what we've watched certain minorities doing in their own neighborhoods. Well, actually, we can do that too, and on a bigger scale.
Much
and
better.
More effectively. And that is indeed what the elites are terrified of. Well, guess what? They're terrified of it because it's possible. Yeah, because it does happen. And I'm not saying that we should do that. Equivalent stuff. I'm not saying that at all. I'm simply saying that I think this will empower people, to use a fashionable word. I think it will empower people because they will see, okay, we do actually have agency. And, they do. It's just that they're trained not to use it. They're trained to be different.
Let's also question why they're doing it this way, right? And this is an important note, because as much as the establishment then can fear this, or they can even come back and say, well, what you're advocating is going to lead to violence. Well, that's not certain at all, and prove that furthermore. But sometimes that's on the basis that they block you and censor you. They interpret things and they say that this is, but the reason what happened with the yellow vests or continuing to happen there is because the decisions are being made undemocratically. The people are not involved in the process of how the country is transforming. In this case, it's a gas tax, ultimately. There's much more behind it than that, but it began like that, and ultimately Macron had to repeal that and say, all right, we're not doing it, that's it. You know, which shows that it's like force works, you know, mm-hmm. and showing, you know, resistance works as well. But they're ultimately going out on the streets because they didn't get approached with a referendum or a decision and a way of partaking in the discussion. And that's what's happening to us too. That's what's happening with people. They have population replacement programs running. They have open borders, endless migration. Now they have systems coming in where they're saying, if you criticize this, it's a hate crime. You'll go to jail. Like at the end of that, there's only one thing people can do, and that's go out on the streets and protest, right? That's the only option that they have left. And I think that's why they are fearful of it, because they know that they're doing all these transgressions. They're doing maybe not things that are illegal, but they're doing things which ultimately goes against letting the people be partaking in the discourse of what's going to happen to the country, you know?
Yeah. And you know, whatever you think about democracy, we do ostensibly live in a democratic era. Our countries are supposedly democracies. And so I'll give you an example based on the global migration, the UN migration pact, right? Okay, the UN's global compact for migration.
And I hate saying it too.
I don't know which combination of words is correct.
But what does compact mean? I get it. It
means white genocide.
It's just another term. Yeah. Well, anyway, the government in Britain, there's this system that we have, this petition in Britain, this website, and it's supposedly, after 10,000 signatures, if a petition reaches 10,000, the government is supposed to respond to it. But this petition has now got 110,000, and it's been 12 days since it got 10,000, and the government still haven't responded to it. Now that it's got 100,000, Parliament, the government, is going to consider debating it. The Parliament will consider debating this petition. Okay, what's the point of getting 110,000 signatures if Parliament can then decide not to debate it? It's absurd. Mm-hmm. But the point is that, 12 days still waiting for a response. And as I should say, the petition is the UK should not agree, it should not sign this compact, this UN compact on migration. And it does seem like Theresa May is going to go and sign this thing in 4 days' time, and there you go. It's just like Emmanuel Macron. They have this attitude that, well, they can just do whatever they like, and the public will ultimately just take it. They won't do anything. And I think that is a lesson that they're really going to have to unlearn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And exactly. And they think they're just going to be able to keep getting away with it, right? They just they won't say anything. It's fine. And it's like, it's like the Goldberg guy said, the head of the Atlantic, the editor of the Atlantic, like, well, as long as there's cheap calories and entertainment available, it'll be fine. It won't be another Weimar, you know. He's like sitting and talking about lectures like that in a synagogue about like the alt-right and stuff like that, you know. And to a certain extent, they have been right, and that is correct, that it's like, as long as people are distracted and they live fairly comfortably, right, then they won't go out and protest. But in France's case, again, that fuel tax is so astronomical for a lot of people and will mean so much less money for people that's when they go out and protest. And as I see it, the Western economies, they cannot continue as they're going forward. Basically, every country is putting itself in irreparable debt, or what do you call it? Our borders are open, endless migration. We're bringing in, importing people from the third world. That we don't put to work, they are dependent on the system, they're costing us massive amounts of resources. You could say, again, that what happened in France, partially it's because they're trying to pay for all of this stuff, right? They need extra money. They said it's all global warming or whatever, but what the hell is that? France needs money to be able to pay for all these migrants and stuff. And so they have to get that money from somewhere, so they end up taxing the people. And so it's like they're locking themselves, they're painting themselves into a corner, whether they know that or not. The economy is not going to bear it. The demographics is not going to bear it. the banking system with the debt and the collapse of it, and it's not going to bear it. And eventually something will crack. One of those things will crack first. And then at that point, they're going to want to have answers, and they're going to want to have people who are responsible for what happened ultimately.
Yeah. And in the meantime, that will happen. But in the meantime, what we need is freedom of speech in order to even discuss these issues.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's part of the global compact on migration, is that you won't even be able to discuss this stuff. But also the censorship on social media that we've been talking about hitherto also prevents us from, I mean, the mainstream media is not talking about this compact. It seems to be largely the alternative media that is making people aware of this damn thing in the first place. So, you know, and if we don't have freedom of speech, if we don't have these platforms and alternative media, then we can't make people aware of these things.
That's right.
It's absolutely essential. We just keep coming back to this matter. What are we going to do about the freedom of speech thing? And I really do think that, again, the answer is that we have to build as broad a coalition for this as possible. Because
we have to keep adapting those too, right? We have to, you know, as I said before, just, you know, if you lose an account, just create a new one, get back on there. You know, mm-hmm. because ultimately, if everyone did that, that's getting more and more censored. The companies that are doing this, they will have to spend more and more resources on hunting these people down or understanding what they're talking about. If you become smart to what it's, say, let's say the language that they were critical of or something like that.
And you have to find new and creative ways to say the same thing and different ways to deliver those messages.
Whatever it is. And because eventually all the algorithms in the world or the AI won't be able to like decode those things. And I've always said the best thing that can happen is when that's the censorship machine starts encroaching on, you know, regular people that actually did not partake in that part of the discussion, right? They just ended up using the similar words or something, and they got blocked or terminated.
Censored
they'll start
platforms by off. Accident. Yeah.
And they'll start getting pissed off and like, oh, whoa, wait a minute, what is this? And we can't have it like this. And, you know, you got to turn it into a weapon of sorts to help to wake people up, right? Make them aware that censorship is bad because it's affecting you too. And eventually none of us can talk about these things, you know? So that's what I say. Have to be smart and see it as a it's a battle, you know. We just have to keep getting back on that horse, adapting to the new circumstances. But don't give up. Don't just cave in and walk away. Yeah. And oh, fine, it's over.
We can't be black belt. This is a long term war. And really, censorship and trying to suppress the truth, that just never works. The spirit of truth is wild and unbridled, and it wants to come out. I mean, just look through history. Look at Red Terror. Look at how communists try and control information. It's just not going to work in the long run. It's not.
All right. Well, let's leave it at that. That's a nice place to end this hangout. So, unless there's anything else you'd like to add.
No, I think happy Christmas, Gu Yule to everyone out there, and thank you for watching. And we had a rough year, a rocky, a lot of bumps and ups and downs, some good things and some bad things. But I think generally we are moving forward. More people are waking up. More people are coming to our side. They understand our grievances. They understand that the complaints and the worries, I guess, that we have are legitimate, and that, you know, we can bring this to people in a rational and way, which makes them understand our positions. And the more that the elite and the globalists are pushing their agenda upon normal people, they'll begin to notice, they'll begin to suffer from these things, and they'll wake up to them. And so we have to just think of it long term, just keep moving forward. Don't give up. Just keep on pushing.
Chip away.
We are going to be successful. It's the only way out of the situation. We're never going to lay down. We're never going to give up. And so, you know, the more we are, I think the better situation we're in. And again, hopefully, maybe we won't, but hopefully we can change it politically. And if not politically, metapolitically, and we can get good representatives into positions of influence and power in politics. And we can begin to change things. We can revert agreements that we signed, or when this government just kept the borders wide open, that
can be they have to go back.
Illegitimate. Exactly. I mean, there's so many things that could happen, and all we're lacking is willpower and vision for what can and should be done to mm-hmm. restore order to this chaotic situation that the globalists have created. So keep on pushing forward, folks.
And I have to add just one thing. You know, we've been hacked. They came for, you know, our payment processor, and I had fears about those things, and they happened, and it took my fears away, and I realized that we really do have some awesome, amazing supporters that are like family that always have our back, and I'm always blown away by that. I was like crying because of all the support and stuff. So, you know, that fear is gone for me now. So that's actually quite liberating in the end too.
Yeah. People are nice, and we help each other out, you know, and that's the most important thing, you know?
Oh, well, indeed. I mean, when I got banned from Twitter, you've hosted me on your channel, and that was just moral support, you know? It was very, very important. But you're also talking about support from the fans in general, and of course that is absolutely essential. I mean, I certainly couldn't go on without that, and I think most of us couldn't.
Absolutely, exactly. And again, people out there need to know that you know, we're not expecting everyone to, at least at this time, voice up or be loud about these things. And maybe it's not the best for them. Then maybe they're in a situation where they would end up being fired or end up in trouble or something like that. And that would just not be worth it. But those people who share our sentiments and understand our legitimate concerns for the future of where all of this is going and how chaotic things are going to get, those people can do one thing, and that's just to support the people that are out there that can be vocal and that are acting as your voice in these regards, and help us spread the word and help us get out there further. And, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where it's just it is what it is, but it's resources and it's money and it's time and manpower and hard work that's going to be able to you know, reach new heights and reach new levels. And that's why everyone out there needs to support the voices that they agree with and those that they feel are helping getting that message out that speaks for them. So, you know, we can't do it without any people out there. So it's up to you guys out there to ensure that, you know, both Woz and us and many of the other outlets out there can continue to push the envelope. And I would hope, last thing I'll say, is that if the establishment and these Silicon Valley companies and these lefty groups or whatever are so concerned that they would go to the lengths that they have to shut us down and terminate us and hack our websites and block us from PayPal and all that stuff, that means that there's also a reason for that, right? We are able to reach people, and they don't like that. So we'll take that as a badge of honor, and we see it that we are a they see us as a worthy opponent. Otherwise, they wouldn't care about us at all, right?
Indeed, absolutely. Lana, any last words from you? Any feminine wisdom to just hang out with?
No, I mean, there's been a lot
bring
of...
the feminine wisdom. Bring the feminine
wisdom. I guess I don't even talk about that anymore because there's so many girls in our scene now. It's great, you know? There's been a lot of marriages and babies, and a lot of that is happening too behind the scenes. So that's really exciting.
Okay. All right, well, let's end it there. So thank you to Henrik and Lana, and of course, Rorik from Red Ice for appearing on Millennial 2018. I hope you enjoyed it.